In September of 2006, 14.3 million Americans tuned their TVs to what then became one of the highest-rated television debuts in history. And a lot of them came back with one phrase stuck in their minds. Save the cheerleader, save the world. Now, for anyone who's not clapping and might not recognize that phrase, it's from a new television drama called Heroes. Heroes is a weekly program about, quote, ordinary people who discover they possess extraordinary abilities. There are hundreds of fan sites, blogs, and watching groups around the country who are devoted to this show whose tagline is, it's time to save the world. Now, to put 14.3 million people in context, that means that roughly one out of every nine people who voted in the last presidential election follows this show. So what is it behind this program that's got people so interested? I wonder if it would be possible for me to stand in a pulpit in this church and offer a message that seems so simple yet compelling. It's time to save the world. When this came onto my radar, I began paying attention to other parts of pop culture that had this same idea. Now, everywhere I looked, at least in television, I was confronted with the idea of changing the world through having extraordinary powers. The Bionic Woman is back on television. One hit show has a man traveling through time, and another is a reality show about magic in which real people display their powers. There's something about this idea of superpowers that seems to enamor us even in a religious community as well. A lot of us came here looking for change. Change in ourselves or in the world. It doesn't take long if you have a newspaper or a computer screen to be bogged down by the troubles of this world and its suffering. I think a lot of us would like to be able to wave a magic wand over the planet and cure all of its ills. The problem, at least for me, is that a lot of times my own character doesn't seem as interesting in this drama as the ones I see in Heroes. The character of sermon writing guy, or the invisible multitasker, student loan woman, they just don't seem as engaging as the ones I see on TV. So I'm not surprised that a lot of what I see in popular culture has people focusing on others who have extraordinary powers. I don't know about you, but I would like to be extraordinary. I would love to save the world. The writer John Hodgman has some of his own thoughts on superheroes. Some years back, when Hodgman was at parties, he would ask those people around him one question and then record their answers for interviews. The question is, flight or invisibility? This is what Hodgman says about people's response. Quote, typically this is how it goes. People who turn invisible sneak into the movies and onto airplanes. People who fly stop taking the bus. Here's one thing that pretty much no one ever says. I would use my power to fight crime. When he asked people about this, most of the people that he interviews say that having your superpower isn't enough to work for the common good. Flight without strength means that you're still weak when you arrive at your destination. An invisible woman who saves a baby from a fire still gets burned. You've got to have the whole package, one man tells him. There's just not much you can do with any one thing. So what? What does this television show and a couple of radio interviews have to do with us? Even in these people's fantasies, they can't imagine working for the common good because they're not perfect. I have to tell you, I feel the same way a lot of the time. What can I do? Like this. I tell myself that there are people out there who are smarter, more talented, more driven than I will ever be. And so often, I do nothing at all. Anybody else? In our tradition of Unitarian Universalism, we've inherited kind of a mixed message about what it means to be the best human being possible. Our denomination says that each and every one of us here today is welcomed just as we are. But it's not over. You've got to keep growing. Our first principle says that we respect the inherent worth and dignity of every single person. This focus on the value of the individual came about formally in our religion when our Unitarian ancestors said no to the Calvinism of their day. It was pretty common in American religious circles during their time to hear that human beings were so depraved, so sinful, that we deserved hell just for being born. Our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors used their reason and conscience to say loudly and proudly, no, humanity is not depraved. We are good. As time went on, our religious forebears joined in what was, at the time, a really fast-growing optimism about the future of humankind. Transcendentalists like Louisa May Alcott, Henry David Thoreau, and Ralph Waldo Emerson began to write and speak about what is holy being inside each and every one of us. Not only are we good, we are divine. Around the same time, the abolitionist Unitarian minister Theodore Parker was led to say this in one of his sermons: "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." Now, if this is all we ever read of Parker, I might be led to think that if the arc of the universe tends toward justice on its own, not a lot I have to do. But this was not Parker. While Parker believed that justice would come into the world, he had no misunderstandings about humans' capacity for evil or the necessity that we join in the fight for equality. While he was hiding freed slaves in his church, Parker preached with a gun behind his pulpit in case he would have to defend their life. Now, you shouldn't have to worry. This is not a common practice among ministers now. But I cannot hide from this question. What is it that would make this church do that? What would make us take a similar risk? One of the great things about this religion, the thing that made me devote my entire life's vocation to this church, is that we will not give up on humanity. However, one of the real criticisms that's been brought against us and other religious liberals is that with all of our optimism about what's possible in this world, we often turn our eyes or ignore the real power for violence and destruction that lies within us. This critique includes me. I left a church years ago that always talked about sin and how unworthy I was as a human being. Now, I can tell you that I did not join another religious community to hear how bad I was as a person, and I did not enter the ministry to tell other people that either. But I made the mistake in my life of believing that if I simply ignored my faults, they would go away. If I stopped using the word sin, there would be no more of it. Well, I might have left that old language at the door when I came in here this morning, but my whole self is here right now. Often I think I've misunderstood what our tradition has been about. I spend so much time wanting to promote what is good and optimistic about humanity that I have a real hard time being honest with myself and my religious life about my failings, what other people call sin, or even just weakness. Deep inside me somewhere, I mistook the notion that I have inherent worth to mean that I might become perfect. And I've spent many hours critiquing myself for not hitting that mark. I doubt I'm the only one. So what is it that makes it so hard for us to live with our imperfect selves? And speaking for myself, it's because I am so afraid I'm going to be the only one. When I first entered into graduate school, I spent the first few months believing that I was accepted by mistake. I was worried to death that eventually someone would figure out I had no idea what I was doing. To tell you the truth, I'm still a little bit worried about that in my internship. When I got the courage to ask my friends about this, they told me that every single one of them was doing the same thing. Sitting in class, scared, and silent. Afraid to admit that they didn't know everything already. When we found out that we weren't the only non-geniuses in class, it was like this fog got lifted from the room. We started asking questions, admitting I've never read that book or heard of that person, and we actually started to learn. It wasn't through denying my faults that I was transformed, but in living into them. Now, this is a pretty simple example. I'm sure that most of the people in this church have a lot more compelling story of their own. How many of us here worry that if we slip up in our lives just a bit, everything is going to fall apart? Many people in this church and many people in the world are bearing an enormous weight, the weight of appearing perfect. Some people in our community bear almost all the responsibility for their families, for an aging parent, and fear that they will fail the ones they love if they don't perform at 110%. A lot of us are in new jobs, in school, or looking for jobs, and worried that if we don't put on the picture of flawlessness in the face of all this competition, we won't even make a living. In this church, we talk a lot about evolution, we talk about progress, but I'm willing to bet I'm not the only one here who's been surprised that day after day, I'm not smarter, more caring, or sometimes any better than I was the day before. My spiritual friends, we have a gift and a responsibility with a free religious community. We have to acknowledge that if we want to be more than just this, if we want to be a radical voice in the American religious landscape, if we want to change the world, we will have to face with courage what is wonderful and frightening about ourselves. It is with these hands and no others that we will change the world. It is possible to be imperfect and divine all at the same time. We're not just in any other club. We've joined together in a religious community to shape the world in which we want to live. While a lot of us here don't believe that we've got to be saved the way that other people use that word, it doesn't mean there's not saving to do. People in this church have been saved from suffering, saved from lives of loneliness or despair, and saved from a worldview that says they're not loved. There is saving to do. No one in this church is going to ask you to be perfect, but you will be asked to serve humankind and this world just as you are. In his message to new ministers at our General Assembly in 2005, the Reverend Patrick O'Neill made reference to the fact that churches can often become retreats from the world if we're not careful. He noted that while Henry David Thoreau did go to the beautiful woods at Walden Pond, he came out again and fought for justice. Now imagine being a seminarian and listening to this message. Brothers and sisters, I've come to announce to you some rather alarming news tonight. In case you haven't noticed, Walden is burning. The woods, our beloved woods, are on fire. Our sanctuary from the mundane cares of the world, it is ablaze tonight. Remember and never let anyone forget, your church's role and function is never merely to serve as just another perennially underfunded nonprofit agency in town. The church's reason for being is to make real the beloved community on earth. Nothing less. Well, I'm happy to say that we have a shared ministry in our churches, and that this call wasn't just for the ministers who stand on this side of the pulpit. This call is for you. The same message that it is time for us to change the world has been echoing for centuries in our tradition. We just have to hear it. During my time at Harvard Divinity School, we had a weekly Unitarian Universalist worship service put on by the students. And once a month, we got to have this service in Emerson Chapel. This is a place on campus where Emerson delivered his famous Divinity School address to the graduates of the school in 1838. Each student got to preach from the same pulpit that Emerson used when he gave this address to students hundreds of years ago. So that we remembered what our task was in religious community, a large plaque hung on the wall facing the pulpit, and it stared you in the face when you led worship, whether you liked it or not. It came from this quote, "Cast behind you all conformity, and acquaint men at first hand with deity." Now, aside from its somewhat outdated language for us now, Emerson's vision, just like that of Reverend O'Neill's, calls to us. As a religious community, we are called to do nothing less than acquaint the people of this world firsthand with the radical and transforming power of love and justice. A sanctuary, a place where we can feel comfortable, is nice from time to time. But we will just be that if we settle for anything less than changing our society in ways that has never been imagined before. So I guess it's time to save the world doesn't seem so silly after all. Each of us is worthy of love, even though we're flawed. Sometimes it is so hard to let this show that we're afraid to do anything at all. We become powerless by our fear of being imperfect. And if we wait until we are to change our lives or the lives of others, it will be too late. My friends, in our work, we will continue to be imperfect. And none of us a superhero. But we are powerful. And we are extraordinary nonetheless. We have what it takes to transform the world. What better time than now? Amen.